Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship in capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. Today, we get to spend time hearing and learning from Rachel McDonough. I think you'll quickly realize that Rachel wears many hats, and we'll talk about that. She runs a successful wealth management business, consults with advisors, she writes books. In fact, jump in here, Rachel, what's your latest book?
Well, the one that's not been released yet that I'm still working on is The Wealth Studio. So that one is to be announced publishing date.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to go ahead and speak it forth into existence.
All right. I love it. Well, so she writes books, leads worship, and also, this is the one that is baffling to me in the context of everything you do, also homeschool your kids. So we'll have to hear more about that. She's been in the wealth management business for 20 years, and her focus is on personal financial planning and investment solutions to help clients align their resources with their values and priorities for a life rich with purpose. I actually pulled that from your LinkedIn website or whatever. So love the way you say that. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be a part of the conversation today.
So is school going on right now, or did the teacher get a break?
The teacher got a break. It is summer break. Although I noticed that in our homeschooling, our kids would forget a lot over the summer, and I work too hard to get their math facts in their head in the first place, so I don't want them falling out over the summer.
So I want an honest answer. Do you make your kids do some stuff in the summertime?
Yes, absolutely. We do required. They get to pick the books, but they're required to read every day, and then they do have math. I just don't believe in stopping math. So we just keep plowing through. And then the other thing that we do that I would say is more for fun is we are doing a human anatomy and physiology course right now that kind of applies for mixed grade levels. And that's just really interesting. And everybody's got a human body if you're human. So we all could stand to learn about that and how it works and how to take care of it well. So we mix a little bit of kind of serious coursework and was just some fun stuff too over the summer.
Well, when I was in probably junior high, I did not like reading. So my mom and dad would actually, in the summertime, pay me to read books. So as long as I read, I don't remember what it was. And I will say today I actually love reading, but back then I hated it. So maybe a little coercion helps every once in a while.
A little motivation, right?
Yeah. So start off, give us a little bit of history of who you are, like where you grew up, where you went to school, and then just a high level of your career, because I'm assuming we'll get into that.
Sure. Well, I had an unusual upbringing, really, in many ways. I kind of alternated time spent in small town Wisconsin, and then my parents were missionaries, so we would also spend usually a couple years at a time in Kenya, in Kijabe, Kenya, which is about an hour from Nairobi. So they were stationed as missionaries at a missionary boarding school. So it was kind of this really interesting melting pot of missionary kids from all over different places in the world who had come, you know, their parents essentially brought them to a boarding school so that they could get an education while their parents were out, you know, working in kind of more remote areas in Africa. And so that was really interesting, really, really formative for me in terms of my thoughts about wealth and money. You know, I think one of the focuses of this podcast is really all about stewardship. So my stewardship thoughts and ideas were probably really impacted by that time.
Mm. How old were you when you left there?
I left when I graduated high school. So I was 18, came back to the US to go to university.
So my question was going to be irrelevant. I said, do you really remember it? But of course you did.
Yes. Yeah, I do. And then I've been back to Africa a couple of times for different things. After that, we did kind of a scouting trip for a fish farm project in Ghana. And brought my husband, Chris, to Kenya to visit with my parents while they were still stationed there and also get a feel for where I grew up. And anyway, kind of moving on post-university, I ended up taking a job in a wealth management firm in downtown Minneapolis, which of course, again, was very different in terms of perspective about wealth.
Mm-hmm.
From there, went on to kind of launch my own wealth management practice, which is called Wealth Squared, a team within the Eversource Wealth Advisors RIA. And then the consulting practice that you alluded to earlier, which is Wealthfluence, both of which are really exclusively focused on faith-based and values-aligned investing.
Which I'm excited to get into that and to hear your thoughts around that. So you're an advisor, obviously, and you've got all these other hats we're talking about. So I'm going to ask this question, and you can go any way you want to. How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you are in your life journey?
I would say, in response to the many hats, I think of them really as mainly just one hat. And that is really, you know, you talked about my worship leader role, which is just a volunteer thing I do once a month. It doesn't take up a lot of time, but I think in terms of my journey and my life purpose, I really see leading people into worship as the overarching theme that kind of ties all of it together. So if it's my kids and I'm homeschooling, then I'm hoping to lead them into a lifestyle of worship. If it's writing a book, then I hope that I can take my experiences of following Jesus and hopefully turn that into something that can help and inspire and encourage other people on their spiritual journey. And then in terms of investors and other advisors, I hope that I can help them to view their giving and their investing as really acts of worship, and also just to align with their values at a deeper level and be able to kind of encourage them in their journey and point them back to the cross. Even though it does sound like a lot of hats, I think they all kind of roll up for me under one. And so it feels cohesive and it doesn't feel too scattered or pulled in many directions.
I have two kind of follow-up questions. One, I'd love to understand this idea of worship. Why is that so central to you? And maybe we'll just start there.
There's this beautiful Hebrew word, avodah, and it's the same word that's used for worship as is used for work or service. And so as I think about my career and my vocation, I think I'm just one of those people who, no matter what I would be called to do, if I felt like God had called me to be a bus driver or a chiropractor or whatever, I think I would have to search out ways to do that as an act of co-laboring, an act of service unto the Lord himself, and an act of service unto other people. And so I think since he called me into wealth management, it makes sense that investing is just kind of the medium for worship, or giving and generosity can be the medium for worship. And so I think not everyone sees things in that way, but I don't do well with bifurcated different buckets of my life. I think I have found a lot of peace and joy. You know, you talked about kind of where am I at in my journey. I would say there's been this wonderful freedom and joy that's come into my life as I've learned how to integrate my values and my faith and my beliefs into every area, where I feel a consistency and a congruity across the different parts of life and work and family and all that stuff. And also, I just have been loving, this maybe kind of a rabbit trail, but I've been loving what's happened since I hit about 40. Most women, especially, I would say, didn't love turning 40. It's a time, I think, when our society is not very kind, especially to women as they age, but maybe to men as they age. It is this kind of negative connotation around having more wrinkles and gray hair. But I'm loving my 40s. I feel like, hey, I know who I am. I know what I'm all about. Mm-hmm. Not everyone wants an overtly Christian advisor, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I've accumulated enough professional designations and years of experience to know that I can do my work with excellence. And I can just focus on finding clients who really value that unique perspective and focus in my practice, which is overtly faith-motivated, values-based investing.
So when did or how did you make that transition into this idea of faith, values, investing?
Yeah, I would say I was introduced to it and felt conviction really strongly probably about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But then there was a couple of years where I just kind of wandered helplessly gathering data, and never felt like I had a pathway forward. And then about 9 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, I just did a wholesale change. So I knew I was going to make a firm change, and I just used the firm change as the kicking off point to say, okay, most of the client assets were in qualified accounts. I had a third-party money manager running all of those accounts, and I wasn't going to be able to have access to them anymore anyway. So I knew I was going to have to change the strategy to something. And I felt like I was 90% confident with this kind of values-aligned approach, using mostly mutual funds and ETFs at that time. Of course, since then, we've branched out into private market investments as well and different things. But at that time, it was just mutual funds and ETFs. And I thought, okay, I'm 90% comfortable that this is really a solid approach. I've been researching it for a while. And I thought, okay, just going to jump in the deep end. So I proposed it to clients as part of the firm change and said, okay, this is a type of investing that we really weren't going to be able to do at the old firm. It's something that I'm excited about. I've moved all of my own personal assets into these strategies, and I think you ought to do the same. And here's why. And so that was actually very successful for me in terms of just building momentum and not kind of getting stuck in analysis paralysis, but really taking clients into the journey. And of course, feeling authentic and doing it because I had led the way by using my own personal capital first.
Your clients, are they all faith-based?
They're not, actually. I work with a wide variety of people with different beliefs, and they all know where I stand. Like, I wouldn't think there's a single client who doesn't know that I'm Christian. Mm-hmm. And they understand that that's been my own personal motivation for an interest in investing in line with different biblical values. But they also understand that I don't require them to think and believe all the same things that I do, and that I can still care for them and serve them with integrity. And so the interesting thing that's, I guess, the last 10 years have really brought to light for me is that there are some distinct differences, for example, between the ESG movement and the faith-driven investing type of approach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But there's a lot in common, too.
Uh-huh. I agree.
When I describe kind of some more unifying values, clients on lots of, you know, like both ends of the political spectrum find themselves in those unifying values, and they say, yes, that's me. And then there's some nuances underneath those unifying values that they may not totally agree with or align with, but they're comfortable with it nonetheless. And they think that there's enough value from having a values aligned approach, even if it doesn't quite nuance perfectly, you know, especially in the public market side where we don't have maybe quite as much ability to truly customize every single detail of the portfolio and still have a sustainable practice model. But I think if you asked any of them, they would say that they value that approach of saying, yep, we're going to start with a values aligned philosophy and then try to fill in the allocation buckets from there rather than starting with the traditional investing and then seeing if it could somehow be crammed into alignment with their values. It just doesn't work that way.
All right. I could go into the minutiae here on that because you and I have some similar ideas, but I'm going to pull out for a second here and go a little broader. How are you trying to change the world?
Well, that sounds really ambitious.
Well, it's funny. I have some people say, well, I'm not. And it's, oh, that's fine, too. But however you would answer that question, what is your contribution?
Well, I think I am probably always trying to change the world. But I sort of laugh at myself because I understand, like, you know, we should make it our ambition to live a quiet and peaceful life. And I don't know if I'm always good at that. But I guess I would say capital has influence. And I can't say that I'm specifically changing the world in any dramatic ways, but I definitely know my spot on the wall, and that's helping investors align their investments with their values and pursue positive impact as well as returns. So knowing that my capacity is limited in terms of the number of clients that I can personally serve, really that kind of desire to have greater impact and maybe do something good to change the world for the better, that was the motivation behind launching the Wealthfluence consulting piece of my time allocation. And so I always set aside some time each week to coach and consult with other advisors to help them do the same if they're inclined. You know, there are a lot of advisors who have a similar conviction, but there are a number of, you know, it's kind of a can of worms. How do you do this well? It seems so subjective. Is the performance going to suffer? There are a lot of just challenges and obstacles that people have to confront in order to be able to roll this out as really a part of their wealth management practice and be able to talk with clients confidently about it. Part of my give back, I guess, has just been building out a suite of resources for other faith-driven advisors around faith-based investing, many of which are free.
If you were to pick one or two clients or any stories that you could relate, what has this shift meant for clients who followed you and implemented the strategies and values implementation that you recommended?
I think it's been different for different clients, but if I could kind of summarize a bit, I would say some of them instantly clicked with this idea. It just really resonated with them. Most of them, I would say, said yes because of our relational capital. They trusted me. Therefore, if I thought it was a good idea, they were willing to go along. And yet some of them were saying, wow, this is so meaningful. You know, I had one client, we had just been through kind of a turbulent period in the market, and she had lost money in one of her investments, but it was an investment that happened to be really, really aligned with her values. Not a concessionary type of investment, but one that was a for-profit investment, but it just happened to be down.
Sure.
So we were talking about some of the medical technologies that were being developed by portfolio companies inside of her fund. And she's looking at the performance report, it's down 30%. Mm-hmm. Yet as we kind of talk through the stories of the companies and the technologies that are being produced and how they're improving people's lives, she kind of teared up and said, you know, I think if I can invest in that, I'm not even sure I care if it loses money. And that was such an aha moment for me, probably more than even for her, where I started realizing this values alignment thing is powerful. It's so positive. It's delivering value to the client on the level of meaning and purpose. It's not just delivering numbers on a statement. So while I would say that we don't focus on charitable capital specifically or concessionary deals, I would say that that moment was very eye-opening for me to just really see firsthand the value of having alignment in the portfolio. So what it does, I think there's a behavioral finance component to this that's really powerful, where even if the market is down, as it is, as we're recording this, of course, the market is down quite a lot. And I do have clients who are still concerned, but they also have, you know, I haven't have been having people call and cash out of their investment strategies. I've been having people say, hey, is the, you know, how are things doing? Should we make any adjustments or not? But I get the opportunity to remind them, oh, let's go back to what we own and why and how it fits for you. And so it's not just that it fits from a risk standpoint or a return profile, but that it fits from a values alignment standpoint. And that values alignment piece is so huge for behavioral finance, helping investors to stay the course for the long run and not be too concerned about the short-term ups and downs.
So it's interesting, two things for you. One, my mom and dad, unfortunately, after I think it was 46 years of marriage, got divorced maybe 6 years ago now. And total side note, at the time, how old was I? 42, whatever. I'll just say as a 42-year-old, it was way harder than I ever thought it'd be to have your parents get divorced. So just total random thought, but it's, I think we think about divorce and it obviously impacting young kids. I was shocked at how it impacted myself and my siblings. But anyways, apart from that, so I was helping my mom and I'd occasionally meet with her advisor. And I sat there, you know, somebody in the industry, and I watched, and it was actually a female. She related very well to my mom and was very helpful in this transition. But as we sat there, she was throwing out numbers and why they made this move in the portfolio. And, you know, here's the, you know, your risk and your standard deviation. And my mom is smart, but my mom doesn't care about that. What my mom really cares about is, am I going to be okay to pay my bills? And do I have enough money to live for the rest of my life? And then it's what you just said. I chuckled and I'm like, if she could have, and they don't, she didn't do values-based investing. But if she had come alongside of my mom and said, exactly what you said, guess what? Here's what your portfolio is doing. But let me just highlight a couple of things that your capital is being used for.
Yes.
My mom would have been like, this is the best advisor ever. So I just resonate with what you said. And in fact, what I tend to say is the financial industry has done a phenomenal job of helping investors think about their goals and their dreams and that kind of stuff. And then coming back and building a risk-adjusted portfolio. But they're missing what you just said is this values integration, which is more important. I don't know about more important, but equally as important as those other variables.
Well, it's definitely very important to investors. Whether advisors are fully on board or not, it's very important to investors. There was a Morgan Stanley study that was done. It's actually been repeated several times. But the most recent one from 2021 showed that over 90% of investors are at least somewhat or very interested in how their investments align with their values.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you anecdotally, I have seen post-COVID, and I think it's COVID, I think it's political, social unrest, we have seen this ever-increasing desire to do that very thing, saying, hey, I want to be a part of the solution. And if my capital can do it, apart from simply philanthropic, let me in on this.
Right.
So I'm encouraged, frankly, about where this is going. But like anything, it can also, and I shouldn't say this word, but it also can be bastardized and gone in directions that I don't always agree with. But we live in a free world and we get to make those choices. So let me keep moving along here. And you already hinted to this. When did you realize the power of capital? And maybe describe what that means to you.
I think the most powerful time in my life for understanding the power of capital Well, it maybe came in two phases. The first one would have been in my formative years living in Kenya. So I remember being in Nairobi and seeing street kids coming up to me begging for money. Of course, I didn't have a job. I was 10 years old when I first went to Nairobi. And yet I did have money in my pocket. And I remember the realization of, hey, I did nothing to deserve or earn being born into a privileged position. I did nothing to earn or deserve my station in life of having parents who were able to provide for me and protect me and put food on the table. And any more than they did anything to earn or deserve being born into destitution and having to, you know, beg for money on the streets, wearing nothing but rags and really just even using the money that they got oftentimes to sniff glue so that they could just get high, and escape their existence. And so I couldn't look at them and say, why are you doing this? It was just an unfairness in the world, right? And so I thought, okay, so I can't do anything about this situation. I can't fix the whole world. We can't save the world like we talked about earlier, but what does it mean? And what is my responsibility as being born a person who did have money? Now, keep in mind, again, missionary parents, when I say we had money,
right?
I don't mean compared to the average family in the developed world. I mean, compared to people living in Kenya. And so when we would come back to the US, of course, I was on government subsidized lunch. I got the free lunch tickets. We were the poor kids when we would come back to the US. But in Kenya, we had a cement block home with, you know, a wood floor in it. And so there were bolts on the doors and there was a TV in there and we were rich, you know, mm-hmm. So relative speaking, we were rich. So I started realizing, first of all, you know, the power of capital where I had money in my pocket that I could give if I chose to, or I could withhold if I chose to. And that could be the difference between this other kid who was maybe the same age as me, similar age, having lunch or not having lunch or surviving that day or maybe not surviving that day. But then fast forward, I think, into my wealth management career, and I really started to realize the power of capital at a totally different level where, you know, I remember kind of having some inkling that maybe some of the investment activity wasn't all that great or didn't align with my values. I remember hearing some of the older advisors in the office mentoring younger advisors saying, hey, yeah, you got to buy your older clients some of those tobacco stocks so they can receive the stable dividends in retirement and help support their retirement lifestyle. And I thought, ugh, you know, like addiction is what produces consistent income. I was like, ooh, that's kind of yucky. And then I don't know, I was at Kingdom Advisors Conference a number of years later, and it really hit me like, whoa, how have I not considered the power of capital as I've directed client investment dollars and my own, how that could be used for either for good or for destruction? And it really captivated my heart especially if I've explored the private market investments where there's a greater amount of impact available, a more direct and tangible impact. And just realizing, wow, you know, and now even seeing one of the funds, the private market funds that I'm looking to invest in actually invest in Kenya. They have a lot of East African investments. And thinking about now, okay, there's power in capital, not just through philanthropic endeavors and handouts, but the power of business and investing in businesses as a more sustainable type of solution for systemic poverty.
And do you think that most of your clients see what you see? Are you able to impart any of that experience onto them?
I am. I would say they grasp it at different levels. So like I alluded to earlier, some of them hear this and they're immediately, yep, that's exactly what I want. And now that they know about it, they'll never be satisfied with any other type of investing. Especially, I think on like, you know, whether we like it or not, maybe avoidance is not in vogue right now, but there are certain things that people just don't want to profit from and they don't have to. So I think there's really tends to be a quick adoption on that front. Like if there's a specific industry, maybe someone lost a loved one to lung cancer, they just don't want a tobacco profit at all. None. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there are a number of clients who've been exposed to this message and it takes more time. And if I'm honest with myself, it took me some time, right? Like I didn't just hear it once and then make a giant change of course. It took me a couple years of researching and kicking the tires and figuring out what this would mean in terms of risk and could I produce a fully diversified portfolio if I chose to go in this direction? What would be the limitations? And it took me some time to wrestle with it myself. And I was one of those people who took multiple. People hear me talk about this now and I have a lot of conviction. I have been executing in it pretty diligently for a decade almost, but it didn't start that way. You know, it started with somebody planted a seed. And then I kind of had that message came up again and again. And so I think that's the way that advisors can be thinking about talking with their clients. If we have any advisors on the among our listeners today, is that drip on the clients, you know, take time, be patient, be understanding of wherever they're at in their journey, be patient with how they respond and react to this idea. But also, you know, even if someone's not originally excited about it, it doesn't mean that they're never going to get there. It just means that they may have some questions and it may take some patience. But I would say that over time, if I had to think about in terms of like the number of my clients who would be dissatisfied with anything else, that number has dramatically increased as I've patiently taught them and worked with them over the last several years.
You know, the ultimate fear I think that advisors have is you're going to lose clients. So have you lost any clients? Have any of them looked at you like you're an idiot, or has there been any?
Yep. I've lost two. Okay. And I think that's a good thing to talk about, because that is the fear, right? I lost one who just said, nope, you know us, we don't care about anything but profits. And I thought, okay, that's all right. I'm not going to try to, if someone just like slams the idea down as an absolute no, that's okay. I don't need to convince or strong arm anyone into this. And they're welcome to choose from a number of referrals for other advisors that I know that would take good care of them and would act with integrity. And then the other one that I lost was an investor who had been utilizing a conventional portfolio. And then when I got ready to do the switch and the firm change, he was kind of on the fence anyway about whether or not he wanted to be a DIY investor. And so rather than go through the paperwork and the hassle of changing firms, he was like, you know, I think I'm good. And let me just kind of do my index investing thing on my own. I think I'll save some on fees, which of course he did. But interestingly, Jeff, the timing of your question, I just 2 weeks ago met with him again. He just reached out on LinkedIn and looked me up after, you know, being gone for 8 years or so from the practice. And he's now saying, I am actually interested in this faith-based investing. I've been watching your posts on LinkedIn. I've read your books. He said, I think I'm ready to talk about this again. I'm not going to be a quick jumper, but I think I'm ready to explore this again with you. So we had a fantastic hour-long meeting. He asked wonderful questions, very insightful, clearly has spent more time thinking about what he's investing in than most clients do. And so I've just been enjoying the journey and just even enjoying watching the different stages that people go through as they learn and grow and gather more information.
I can relate to all those stages because I went through them myself, although I've never systematically thought what the stages were, but I think one of my first things was, my dad's a cancer doctor, which is neither here nor there, but it was probably 13, 14 years ago. I'm like, you know what? And I owned a tobacco company, which owned a bunch of other things. And I finally, I'm like, you know what? I don't think I want to do that. And so that was the first move. And then I ended up doing some mobile homes. And then we did some affordable housing. And it's a little bit addictive, really, when you start to go.
Yeah, you kind of fell in love with it, didn't you?
Yeah, totally. So, and the last comment is the story that you told about that guy, I think, is really powerful, because what it shows you is, here's a guy who was doing it on his own. And arguably, you can do it cheaper on your own if you choose to.
Yep.
Which, that was the reason he did it. And then you realize what's, it sounds like potentially bringing him back is this values piece.
Yep.
To me, that's a really, really powerful story. And you said, 8 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, it's been really an interesting story. And I think the stuff that really happens is so much more interesting than the things that we think should happen. Like, what actually happens is far more interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, looking back on my relationship with him, of course, what I wanted to have happen is that he would say, oh no, I'm not going to leave. I'm so happy with you as my advisor. I'd go to the moon and back to be able to continue working with you. My ego would have loved that. But in reality, him saying, no, thanks, I think I'll do it myself. And then going on this, you know, 8 year trek of, you know, like, here he buys a couple books and then he teaches a class at his church based on one of my books. I didn't even know that was possible. And then now he's coming back around to saying, you know, maybe the investing piece does matter. And just him being as thoughtful as he is about doing his own research and digging into the details a little bit, I think it shows a lot of prudence, even though maybe not fast acting. I think he's got some determination and fortitude to kind of keep plugging away on being on his journey. And if I get to be a part of that journey again, I'll be honored to do that. And if not, that's okay too.
Well, here's the thing. You've influenced his journey, whether you're directly working with him or not, which is pretty cool, just by the decision and living in congruency to what you believe and how you're called to live. So I think that's really cool. So when I made the switch over to impact investing, as the term that I use, you know, oftentimes in the financial world, we talk about stewardship as it relates to philanthropy, giving, tithing, but we don't talk about stewardship as it relates to our investment capital. And so you don't have to answer it that way, but leading into this question, how do you think about stewardship? And then how do you help your clients work through that?
I think of stewardship as not necessarily trying to have the most. Like, people think of financial planning as how do you get more? I think of stewardship more broadly, not just about giving, but and not even just about having the most or accumulating more, but really about making the most out of what we have, which involves deeply and intentionally identifying our own personal definition of success, right? And so sometimes we're just busy, we're reacting. I had a client say to me once, I just don't even know where my money goes. It comes in, I make a lot of it, and then it goes out and it just kind of flows right through my hands. And I don't really know where it's going or what it's doing. That would be the problem that we hope to help clients solve, is that how can we be intentional about making the most out of what you have and helping your capital align with your own personal definition of success? So that should follow in giving, it should follow in saving, it should follow in spending, and it should follow in investing, that we can do in all of those categories and buckets, we can align capital with your own personal definition of success. And following someone else's definition of success, by the way, always leads to regret, because our definition of success is all about our core truth and identity. And so if we're basing it off of some rule of thumb or something that we heard Oprah say, or, you know, whatever it is, it's just never going to really fit and be authentic. It takes the hard work of thinking through things. And that is, you know, in my book, True Treasure, I have a couple of chapters just to help people think through what do they really value and believe so that they can set goals and priorities that align with those values and beliefs. So for me personally, I'll just use myself as an example. Because I consider my core identity is that I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and I derive my core identity and my definition of success from biblical wisdom. And the Bible teaches that all the wealth belongs to God and he entrusts it to us as his managers. I approach my wealth management and my stewardship saying it's not really mine to begin with. And because that's one of my core beliefs, I endeavor to manage my wealth, including the investment side, in alignment with God's values and heavenly culture. So whether it's my saving, spending, investing, or giving, I want it to align with heavenly values. And so I can co-labor with God to essentially do my little part to pull heavenly culture and values into the earth, so that it, just like Jesus taught his disciples to pray, Father, let your kingdom come, let your will be done on the earth as it is in heaven. So there is no slave labor in heaven. A worker is worthy of his wages, right? So I'm on a journey to learn more about being careful with how I invest and how I spend, especially, you know, things like the garment industry. Like, there's just so much, so pervasive, the slave labor and the cocoa industry. They're just different industries that are so riddled with this issue. And yet I know, again, just like going back to the kids in Nairobi, I know that there are people who are born into less advantageous circumstances than my own who get stuck in these cycles of having to do work, forced labor, or human trafficking, or different issues. I want to learn how to be a good steward in the way that I purchase items for my consumption. I want to be a great steward in the way that I invest, so that I'm not investing in things that don't align with my values. And I want to be a great steward in the way that I give, so that I can, you know, sow into nonprofits that are really bringing about the type of changes that I would want to see in the world.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts. And I think you said save, spend, invest, and give, or whatever order.
Yep.
I created this rolling single, well, not single words, but maybe a couple words at a time that tells a story in like 30 seconds. And I use those very four things, because where your treasure is, you'll see that your heart will be also. And so it is actually quite an interesting exercise to look and go, how am I saving? You know, how am I spending? How am I giving? And how am I investing? And you get a sense of where your heart's at. It's a little bit convicting, But it's a very interesting exercise. So I appreciate your comments. Okay, the last one is, and I always have to preface this, if you want to leave your family out of this question, you can, because there's always this bias, because it's usually in everybody's, you know, bucket list here. If you could make a dream come true for your life, what would it be?
I think I'd have to go back to my slave labor theme again one more time, if I haven't worn that one out. I would really love to see investors bring about significant efforts to eliminate slave labor from supply chains. And I do think it's possible through advocacy and also through some investing, just choosing companies that are working on this issue, for-profit companies. So a great example would be some friends of mine at Eagle Venture are looking at launching a theme-based anti-slavery private equity fund. And I'd love to be their first investor. This fund doesn't exist yet, but I hope it will one day. And of course, none of our listeners should consider this an investment recommendation.
Right.
The compliance disclosure. But I love this type of innovation. And I'm seeing fund managers like Eagle and others that are just going deep on impact while still maintaining profit targets that keep the funds sustainable and can attract additional investor capital. And I know that so much of what you're doing, Jeff, at Common Good is really centered around that theme. So I guess I'd love to see if I could have a dream come true for our industry. I would say, bring on more capital. You know, there's just such a, I feel like there's so much demand out there. There's so much interest out there. And as fund managers get more creative and find ways to give access to these investments to more retail level investors, I think there could be an awesome inflow from that. I also think as advisors get more comfortable talking with their clients about these more personal topics of values and what type of impact they'd like to see in the world, I think there's going to be a huge amount of capital that gets redistributed, and I'd love to be a part of it.
Well, I'm going to be cheering for you because I completely agree with you. You used the word creativity, and I'm going to bring this up because I literally just was working on this. It's a 3-paragraph for a newsletter. There's this notion that I think is out there in America that says, if you do good with your money, how can you actually make money? Like, there's this false notion. And one of the things that I've noticed over my 5 years at Common Good and probably about 7 years in the impact space is when you define success differently or more broadly than simply financial, and you put in other non-financials, what's interesting is I have watched and experienced these asset managers and ourselves as we do this. It actually creates different playing field, different variables. And I've watched so much creativity and innovation, way more than you would think, because the natural reaction is, oh, well, then you got to be doing it for charity. You got to give it away. And you're like, no, it actually unleashes trying to figure out new ways to solve this and define success differently. So when you just said the word creative, I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's been shocking to me. And I won't name the names, but like in my past life, I got to work with some of the biggest names in the industry. And some of these boutique managers in impact absolutely rival the innovation and creativity that I've seen.
Yeah, it is. It's really encouraging. This space is developing so beautifully, and the variety and everyone putting their unique spin on things. I just love to see all the new products being launched.
So if somebody wanted to get your book or see your website, can you tell us where they go for that?
Sure. So investors can go to wealthsq.com, as in wealth squared, wealthsq.com. And then if we have any advisors listening, wealthfluence.com has a bunch of cool freebie resources. You can just go and please help yourself. I spent a lot of time making them. I hope people use them. And there's a lot there to be found for any advisors who are interested in this kind of values aligned, faith-based type of investing. And then the third website is makeyourmoneycount.com, has a blog and some different just thought leadership and books and stuff that are available.
Great. Well, Rachel, it's been a pleasure getting to know you more. And it was fun to obviously connect with you a couple weeks ago, but commend you and the journey that you're doing. I love the fact that you're not only focused on your clients, but also trying to move the industry forward. So I'm assuming this will be one of many conversations that we might have. And you really have a unique spot in this faith-driven space. And so I want to see you continue to succeed there. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate your spot on the wall too. Common Good is such a valuable partner for advisors and RIAs who are looking to get into this space, but don't have the time to do all of that due diligence themselves. So we really appreciate what you all are bringing to the table as well.
Grateful to do it. So with that, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.